Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. Then, if you want to jot the phone number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you hear your question or comment to our guest. Live. Once again, that's after the top of the hour news. In the meantime, I've got to welcome our guest today. So far, so good. We have one counselor on hand. Seth Benham, welcome. Mr. Pill, if you're on your way, please drive carefully. We'll wait for you here. But in the meantime, Seth, it's you and I. Welcome to the microphones of KJO Radio.
I'm back. I might as well just be sitting on your side.
I was going to say, we'll just reserve that seat for you.
Yeah. No, here we are. I guess we'll just get right into it today, you know, just us.
Well, what are you dealing with right now? What are your constituents talking about? What's top of your mind right now as we get into it? A big meeting coming up on Wednesday night.
Yeah, so tomorrow night, I mean, I think the big one is the resolution authorizing the award for the non-bargaining salary study proposal. So that one's coming back around. You know, we discussed it 2 weeks ago, and there was a low bidder that we asked for more information from. They have since said that they were no longer interested. So that's interesting to go back now, and which, you know, now that they're not no longer interested, that brings the price up a decent
about $10,000.
$10,000, unfortunately. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. You know, I think the other ones, because on 2 weeks ago I was looking more into the Evergreen Solutions, and I think it was Logic Compensation Group, and you know, they both had a lot of history and a lot of experience. So I'm a little bummed to see that they. They want to withdraw from the process because I think there's benefit to, you know, they had a little less experience under their belt. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, right? There's benefit to having somebody that maybe doesn't have as many clientele at the moment, but they can give us more one-on-one time versus going with somebody that's been in the industry a long time and probably has a huge staff of people working on all kinds of these studies. So,
and even at $35,000, we're a little guy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, review for the people exactly what we're trying to ascertain here.
Yeah. So, you know, a little over a year ago, year and a few months ago, we originally had a presentation regarding the non-bargaining salary group, which is about 50-ish employees, you know, all the director positions and a handful of others. And so they're just non-union. And basically, we got pitched a proposal or a study that was done by McGrath's. And again, that was a little over a year ago. And then since then.
And everybody thought that one was way out of line.
Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out now if it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's easy to say that it was. You know, now, did they mean to do that? Was there any nefarious actions going on behind the scenes? I don't know, right? I mean, conspiracies can happen anywhere and you can start them at any time. You know, maybe McGrath just said, hey, you know, someone definitely indicated, let's get us towards the top of the, you know, the pay scale for any city in Oregon. And so that's what they set out to do, clearly. And then, you know, out of that, we formed the, non-bargaining task force, which was, you know, me and Rick and a few other community members. And, you know, we met probably, I don't know, four or five times, I think. And we came up with some alternate plans based on that information. However, the dollar value was still, it was still a decent chunk, right? And I knew going into it every time we came back to council with a proposition that it was probably going to get shot down. Because it was just, you know, it was $1 million, right? For year one. And then from there, it just scales up rapidly. So it's just a hard pill to swallow. And so now, you know, we're back. I think, you know, a couple of us, I definitely was a proponent of let's go find another, private, company to do another study. Just because the McGraths, you know, they were hired a couple years ago now. I can't remember. I was not on council at that time. And I mean, I'm assuming council may have approved it, but I don't know if they ever went through and hand selected them. So, you know, my thought process in it all was, look, we should go back to the drawing board. Unfortunately, we're here again. It's not something I don't think we want to be here. The staff doesn't want to be here. We don't want to be here. But we're kind of put in this position where, well, the data that we got and the information we got is skewed in the wrong direction. We don't have an appetite for it. So we really have to go back and just start from scratch, you know. And also this came with, let's identify cities that are local, more local to here, right?
Comparable.
Comparable in terms of, you know, size, you know, Southern Oregon based for the most part. And so that's kind of what we're doing now. I think it makes sense, again, because we've tried for the last year to figure this out, and every time we've kind of hit a wall. So let's just wipe the slate clean, hire someone that council has vetted and approved and thinks, yes, this makes sense. And also somebody that we can work with through the process. Cause I mean, like I said, I came on council and I just, the McGraths just landed into my lap of, all right, here's the salary study. Here's what we came up with. And that was that. So I think this process will be better. You know, again, it costs money. And I said it when we agreed to move forward with getting an RFP, you know, it's going to cost money. I mean, the things that they're going to have to do, I mean, first of all, nobody on council has that deep of experience and knowledge. You know, I mean, I'm a business owner, so I have people on staff, I hire people, but you know, when you get into HR and you get into the legality, especially in Oregon, right? We have the pay equity laws and all that. So it's, there's a lot you have to, a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of things you have to know. And I just thought that, you know, if council were to try to take it on or the task force even, you know, we would just be going in circles, spinning our wheels.
Yeah, that was my question. Is what did the task force do? I mean, these salaries that the citizens are talking about ought to be, that's public knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, did the task force attempt to go out individually and check with these cities, check online? Was that process gone through?
Yeah, I mean, it was never agreed in the task force that we would do that because we knew it would take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. There was some people, I know Rick spent a lot of time, you know, getting his own information. But again, we kind of all agreed in the first meeting that we would accept McGrath's results as they stand. It was more about the cost, right? And how much it was going to cost up front to afford this and actually make it happen. So that's where we kind of went. And, you know, we were talking about, okay, where are we going to place them on the step? You know, can we do a 10% reduction? How much is that going to save? And again, it saved some money. But, you know, when I was in these meetings, I'm just looking at them like, it's still a lot of money. It's still a lot of money to vote through in one swoop and say, here you go. You know, and my thought process, and I said it in public meetings too, is like, I don't, you know, the staff is great. We need staff. I mean, you know, I have a company. You need people to do certain jobs, right? So I don't think it's that council doesn't value those people.
Yeah. By and large, I think we have a great staff.
100%.
And I think everybody agrees with that.
100%. You know, and I think if you just look at right now where we're at, I mean, the economy, you know, I mean, coming out of COVID still, I feel like, you know, prices are skyrocketing. Everyone's struggling, right, across the board. And so to just say, yeah, here you go, you know, on taxpayer dime, that's a tough decision to make, you know. And the one thing, you know, from the beginning that was brought up was that there was the in the fire department specifically, right, there was that issue when, you know, somebody that was non-bargaining, but then there was a lieutenant or I can't remember the exact, you know, status of,
as opposed to a bargaining, one overseeing
yeah,
the other.
Yeah, and so if you're on the union, but you're right underneath in terms of the seniority, you would actually get paid more because you're in the unions and you got overtime. And so if you agreed to take that raise and job classification step up, then you would no longer get overtime. Therefore, you'd actually be making less money. So there's that, which is hard, right? And I said from day one, I was like, we should at least just figure out that for police and fire, right? I mean, those people are the ones, they really put their life on the line every day for the citizens. And I think, you know, most people in Grants Pass really respect our police and fire and what they do for us. And I mean, if I were in that position, why would you take the raise and jump
and
up
and lose money
in duty and lose mm-hmm. money? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't pan out. So yeah, it's a lot to consider, you know. And again, I think going back to the drawing board and really just getting back to, okay, what makes sense for Southern Oregon, you know, because some of these rates that we were comparing to previously were out, Lake Oswego, for instance, was on there. I mean, you know, it's a great place, but mm-hmm. it takes a lot of money also to live there and purchase property and anything. So I think we want to respect the staff, but we want to do it also while taking into consideration the taxpayers, the people that elected us, you know, and expect us to be good stewards of the money.
All right. If on Wednesday night we award this bid or authorize the city manager to go in and award the bid, you've got four bidders left. The lowest is $25,500, I think.
Yeah.
If that happens, how long do we expect the study to take? Do we have an idea?
Well, that was the interesting thing is when 2 weeks ago when we reviewed all this, Synergized actually also they were the lowest amount and they had the shortest amount of time to delivery, which also from my experience, I was like, I don't know about this, right? It seems too good to be true. And we brought it up. We asked them. And so I think, you know, mostly these other ones fell within, I think it was anywhere from 9 weeks to, I think, 14 weeks or something, you know. So definitely a couple months. You know, I think probably, I would say 3 to 4 months we'll have. And maybe shorter if council gets the information and we see it. We're like, yes, this is looking like we're going the right direction. So it's still going to take time.
Still going to take, 2 to 3 months in terms of what happens in government is fairly quick.
This is true. This is true. And I will say, you know, although this process has taken a long time, there's definitely been some hiccups along the way, for sure, no doubt. But, you know, government does need to move slow in certain decisions, right? Especially when you're talking about money. And it may take a long time. You know, and I know that some staff get a little disgruntled about that. However,
here's my next question. How's the morale over there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's okay. I mean, you know, I don't know all of them personally or talk to them on a day-to-day basis. I know last year, you know, I was kind of the one to push for the COLA.
Like, I was going to say, they did get a COLA increase.
Yeah, you know, and I thought, okay, well, at bare minimum, let's give the COLA, right? Because they did skip a COLA, I don't know, exact couple years ago, or maybe a few years in a row. And so I figured, okay, let's at least give them that so they know that, you know, we're trying. We're not just trying to leave them high and dry in terms of, you know, no raise at all, especially when, you know, costs are rising and things are going up. I think Rob just pulled in.
Oh, okay.
He's here. So yeah, no, I mean, you know, and again, I think at the end of the day, we're all trying. We do care about the staff. We do care about making sure that we make the best decision possible, you know, and the one that makes financial sense long term.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We're going to continue. We'll give Mr. Pella time to get in here. In the meantime, we'll be right back. Here. Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. And now we have two counselors here joining us. Seth Benham is City Councilor Rob Pell. Rob, you got your breath yet?
Yeah, thank you very much. Very sorry I'm late.
Oh, well, we apologize. No apology necessary.
Okay.
We know that there's a story behind it. We won't delve into that right now. In the meantime, we were dealing with, of course, the first part of the show. We really dealt down on the resolution authorizing the intent to award the non-bargaining salary and compensation study proposal. Would you like to weigh on that? My thoughts?
Well, I know that I remember listening last month, Chuck, that you were a little, you had some question about why we would pay you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
$25,000 yeah. Is the lowest bid right now.
Yeah, exactly. And while it seems as though, you know, that is a big chunk of money, but the fact is, you know, our government is not a mom and pop. And we've got to provide data that's defensible. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize some of the stakes involved. You know, the issue of pay equity, I mean, that's a term that, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that would be when an employee in one department feels they're doing roughly the same amount of work or have roughly the same credentials or the level of expertise and isn't getting paid the same as someone in another department. Those types of things, as of about 2023 or four, there were state laws that made really big penalties for cities that have pay equity violations. And to give you an idea, with one pay equity violation, just one employee who was found to be the aggrieved party, so to speak, the city could have to pay them 2 years back wages, compensatory damages, punitive damages, attorney fees and cost, city and employee attorney's fees, liquidated damages and penalties. That could be for one, what I would consider to be relatively minor or even honest, you know, misunderstanding. So paying a consultant that would hopefully help us get us through that and would give us a defensible explanation as to why people are classified certain ways you know, that alone would be worth it, in addition to having wanting to be fair to the employees. So, you know, the other thing a lot of people don't may not realize is that, and I'm not going to mention any specifics here for obvious reasons, the council has been in multiple executive sessions with a complaint from one employee right now who's seeking, you know, $250,000, you know, in a payment from the city because they felt that they weren't treated fairly. And so when you look at the kinds of penalties and the costs involved down the line, in addition to wanting to be fair to the entire employee, you know, to everyone who's involved, all the employees, you know, this is not something that Seth and I can just sharpen our pencils and work out to our satisfaction. You know, this is like a new state law that came in 23 or 24 that makes it really important that cities do their best to get this right. That doesn't mean we're immune to prosecution or immune to anything later on, but we have to essentially show that we've done our best, and hopefully we get a consultant who can justify, you know, the moves that we're saying. So again, $25,000 from your perspective and from the taxpayer's perspective is a giant amount of money. But the other side of that is also even bigger, in addition to wanting to be fair. So hopefully, I don't know what you guys covered before I got here, but hopefully that covers some of it.
It does, as a matter of fact. Are you comfortable with the four bids that you've got left?
When you say comfortable, interesting. I mean, I've looked at them all, and frankly, you know, the one that we had last time, it was clearly a startup business. The one that dropped out, that was the low bidder, mm-hmm. was a startup business that clearly gave us market penetration pricing. They were looking for business, and that had a lot of potential upside for us. You know, I don't mind using a new vendor if they're looking to make good, but frankly, the city staff didn't ask for any references or examples of their work. And if you're going to deal with a new company, you need that stuff. And so when council, I guess, kind of, I might have been the first one, but when council kind of demanded that from them, they decided they wanted to drop out. So that would have been great to pay the low bidder. The others, one of them has a negative reference, but the fact is that one also has about 300 different cities they've worked for. So it, would one negative reference out of 300 jobs be meaningful? I don't know the answer to that, you know. But there was a good example on the last one, the more expensive one, who I don't think I would choose. The way they laid out compensation from different cities, I really appreciate it because it's very easy for myself and other counselors to understand how a city compares to others. So that example of how they did it, I would like to actually give to whoever it is we choose and say, gee, we'd like something like this because this would be really easy for council to understand. So it was really good we got that bid, even though it was the expensive one. They did give us an example, I think, of something that'll make our jobs easier.
Let me just outline for the people the range that we're talking about here. The high bid is $35,000.
I believe so.
And the low bid, the one that's left right now is $25,500.
Right.
So, and there are a couple in between there.
Right. And it's hard to know. I mean, it's really hard to know. I mean, we're not, no one on the council is a CPA, and no one on the council has been an HR director. And, you know, we've had really bad experience with, frankly, our staff choosing the last consultant. It could not have gone worse. So, you know, we're not in an easy position. we all acknowledge we're not experts on this.
Well, that's why you guys get the big bucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so we want to get it right, but, you know, we're doing it on, you know, to some degree on our own, you know.
Well, this has been certainly interesting. First half was Seth, the second half was you, and not necessarily conflicting, but certainly different perspectives on the situation.
I really look forward to going back and hearing what Seth had to say.
You're home and listen, aren't you?
Before tomorrow's meeting, I need to know that, yeah.
All right. Anything else that you're dealing with right now, Rob?
Oh, what else are we dealing with right now? There's
got a handful?
Well, I mean, I think the big one is Parker's Place.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, that's coming up. Real soon.
Oh, that's supposed to be finished in June, and what is the situation there? Last we heard, everything was going smoothly. Is that not the case?
I don't want to say that's not the case. I think, you know, I kind of had this fear going into it, especially once we started getting closer and closer, and they hadn't really broke ground, and there was some potential permit issues, and I don't know the full story behind those, or, you know, maybe where the blame falls on that. I think we're hopeful that at least by June 1, we will have the beds available. Because at minimum, they need to have, obviously, the Connex containers, you know, prefabbed, which they are working on simultaneously at a different location in
Correct.
Town.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is have those on, ready to roll, and at least bathrooms, whether that's, you know, the porta potties tile where they can take them in and out. Those are kind of the two at least bare minimum things. Also the ADA access. So as long as they can have those, you know, if there's other things that still need to be completed afterwards, that can still be done. But we need a few things to happen to be, you know, so it can actually be occupied June 1. So it's going to be interesting. They're working, I think they're working 7 days a week right now. So yeah, you know, and then we just had a meeting last week. They're working on kind of the manual, and the expectations. So we're fine tooth coming that this week. And making sure that, you know, it covers all the bases. But again, you know, even last week, you know, we're talking about objectively reasonable, what's the low barrier, you know, and it's still, there's so many questions about what that even means. You know, it's so hard to nail it down. You know, one thing we talked about last week was pets, dogs on the property, because someone in the group said, you know, on average, they claimed about 50% of these people have a pet. So if you're thinking 150 beds, you're thinking somewhere around 75 dogs potentially, which, you know, I hadn't even thought of that number. And you know, on that size of property, that definitely changes things, I think.
Well, just visually walking around town, you can see that many of them have pets with them for various reasons, I would imagine.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And I just like to add, I mean, I agree with everything, all of Seth's concerns and everything he pointed out. I'd like to just say that, you know, from the get go, frankly, I think that, and I'm not trying to place blame, but it's my feeling that staff really should have realized that 6 months was really, really quick to ask anyone to perform this level of job. And I don't even know if that was realistic. And then when we got into all the additional huge amounts of paving that were going to be required, and then you got into the stormwater runoff, because, you know, when you pave, you got to deal with the runoff. And the fact that a lot of that runoff abuts into Highway 99, which is, you know, an ODOT, under ODOT auspices. I mean, ODOT can be a real bear to deal with. So, you know, all kinds of extra, you know, collection pools and everything else had to be incorporated that nobody saw going in. I don't even think the city staff saw it going in. So my understanding is that Bernie, the lead contractor, I mean, I think he's worked 36.
We had Bernie in here a couple of weeks ago, cool. Yes.
Yeah, he's worked 36 days in a row now. So he's I really hope that afterwards he can take some time off, because he's doing his absolute best. But the other thing I would just like to add is I'm not, as a resident of Grants Pass and as a counselor, I'm not particularly concerned if it doesn't open until June 15th. I mean, what is an extra 2 weeks in the overall scheme of, we've been dealing with this since 2018, you know? So for, you know, an 8-year lift, an extra 2 weeks to me, or an extra month to me, is not a huge deal if it's clear that we're moving in the right direction. And it is clear that Bernie is legit. And it's, you know, I know that the city manager and the city attorney were down at the site a couple of weeks ago, and they know it's legit. And we all know that, you know, everybody's doing their best. So an extra few weeks to me is after 8 years is not a really big deal, you know?
All right, so we might just be a little bit behind schedule, but everything is going
well. Bernie would be very upset for me to agree with what you just said, even though I do.
He says he's on schedule.
He says he's on schedule, and he's working, you know, 8 days a week to make it happen. So I'm hoping that he does, because he's taking a lot of pride in that. But yeah.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much so far. This first half hour has just flown by. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show, and we're going to pause for news. Stay tuned. We'll open the phone lines when we come back right after about 10:05 this morning.
3 weeks of savings continue with BuyMart's latest savings book. Pick one up in...
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. Phone lines are open. If you want to give us a call, it's 541-476-1270-1270. And as soon as you hear the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in the queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest. Our guest today, City Councilors Rob Pell and Seth Benham, are in studio today. We're waiting to take your air calls. An interesting first half hour. We're going to continue here in the second half hour. First of all, I want to pass along just a little traffic report that Midland Avenue is closed between 6th and Washington this morning. So if that's part of your commute area, avoid that or take a different route. And that brings up the next question about what's going on with that that parcel of land right next, just to the north of it there. Rob, you're interested. You had some information on that. We have a consultant again beginning to get some information.
Sure. Thanks, Chuck. And yeah, I've been interested in that and actually kind of been pushing for that for about 6 years. Before I was even on council this time, I had written emails to the council back in 2019 or so or 20 about, gee, there's an empty parcel that's getting no tax. We're not collecting any taxes on it. It's about 8 acres and we need a lot of housing. What can we do as a city to potentially?
And it's prime acreage, right?
Prime acreage. So what can we do? And this council, you know, I brought it up to this council. This council, I should say the last council in 22, when it came up for sale, we jumped on it. Within a day, we actually had a bid in, or we had gave the manager direction to try to buy it. And then this council's push forward, and we've hired a consultant to reach out to the neighborhood and so forth. And I've had and talked to stakeholders, but I've had a bunch of people ask me, citizens ask me, why did we buy it? You know, why did the city have to buy it, and why wouldn't we just leave it in the private sector hands? And my answer has been is that as a city and as the citizens, we would have had almost no input or say into what went in there if we didn't buy it. And, other than zoning restrictions, this way we can potentially, as a city, we can potentially maybe incentivize that. We can potentially give a little bit of direction. We can take feedback from the citizens in that area and all over town, which is really critical. Otherwise, frankly, if a developer was following zoning regulations, the citizens would have really had no real input in what went in there. So we've got an ability to steer that a bit because we own it. And we don't plan on owning it into the future. I don't believe that we plan on being the property owners there. But we're going to try to work with a developer or several developers into making something that the citizens want and the city needs, which I think most of us agree that a lot of housing, it should be part of that. And so we had a community outreach meeting two Thursdays ago, mm-hmm. and the room was packed. And if I had to characterize what went on in that room, there was, like any other city council meeting, whether it's in council chambers or this was in a separate place, in a project like this, there's always a lot of community concern. Traffic is probably the number one concern. You know, what's the traffic going to do to their neighborhood? How is the architecture and whatever goes in going to fit in with their neighborhood? Because there's a big historic aspect to the nearby neighborhood. And so these are the types of concerns people were asking, and they want to know why we bought it. And again, traffic, and things of that nature. And so this is what we're hearing just in the very initial round. And then the consultant got together with, I believe, 8 different stakeholders. And luckily, we got a very well-known civil engineer in the development community to donate basically or generously give 45 minutes of his time to discuss with the consultant what he saw as, you know, these were all good ideas, but what he saw as the potential drawbacks to any one of these ideas with regards to funding or other things. And so that was like a masterclass in civil engineering, and it was fantastic that the consultants could actually hear from a local developer or someone very with a lot of expertise in the local development community, and he could tell them what his thoughts were. And I was at that interview, and that was, I felt, very helpful for everyone. So that's where we're moving. We still have more stakeholder interviews that are going to happen, I believe, in a couple of weeks. In other words, listening more to the public. And then we're going to go back to the Citizens Advisory Committee. That's a group of about 5, and I'm the council liaison. And, you know, the consultant is going to, run by what his thoughts are up to that point. So it's a pretty involved thing, but I think overall the fact that the city did purchase it and does have the ability to some degree shape it, that means our constituents have the ability to some degree, hopefully, get their input and shape it. So
now, is the survey still on the city's website?
surveys on the city website.
There was a survey that Thursday night, and I said that was going to stay on the city's website for
a
while.
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, what the cutoff. I would imagine it would be, because no decisions have been made. You would want the survey to still be out there, so I would imagine it would be, because we're not even close to the decision-making point yet.
What's the next step with the consultant?
The next step is, I think it's middle of June. They're going to come back and share with the advisory committee, which I think is about six people and myself, some of what the feedback. They're going to collate the feedback that they've gotten, and they've also going to go over some of the financial ramifications of some of the things that they've been able to initially work out, so that we can begin to kind of narrow the funnel a bit as to what wouldn't work there and why, because certain things can be ruled out maybe a little more easily. The fact that that property doesn't really have any very, very little Sixth Street frontage, which we actually would love to be able to get as part of that project, the two buildings that do front Sixth Street. But so far, they're, the owners of those properties haven't either responded or are not interested in selling. The fact that it has very little Sixth Street property does limit a lot of the retail possibilities there. There's some of the consultants and the local engineer felt it's very unlikely that a grocery store chain would want to put a grocery store in a place where there's no major frontage of a lot of cars, a lot of drive-by traffic. And so, in other words, it'd be hard to get a grocery store to actually want to invest there without Sixth Street frontage. So I'm saying the funnel may start to limit or start to come down, narrow a little bit, hopefully within the next 2 weeks, as to what things are really just not likely to happen for financial reasons. But it's still, since it's still very much in the beginning stages, our ears are very much still open.
Yeah. All right. Seth, didn't mean to include you out of that. You want to weigh in on that property?
No, I mean, Rob covered most of it. I'm kind of a little bit further away from that project. I'm not on the committee or anything like that. But I just think that it's it's good for the city. I think economic development, it's great. And I'm curious to learn more about, what they kind of narrow it down to. And it would be awesome if we, could get some more of that Sixth Street frontage. But again, that comes down to
I'm unclear about which buildings we're talking about over there. Is the word condemnation in the city of vocabulary?
You said it. I didn't say it. Seth didn't say it.
Okay.
It's on the corner.
Not the vocabulary.
On the corner of Midland and Sixth, there's a kind of a pink-orange building that I've never seen any business in.
It's been vacant for all forever. I know.
And nobody, it's like the mystery building, I'll call it. And then there's one just north of there also. And I don't know what the asking prices would be. I have nothing, because I don't know that we've even heard back from those owners. I believe staff did reach out to them. But at this time, we've got to look at what we do have, and we'll see where the future goes. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's one to keep an eye on, along with Parker's Place and everything else. I have just a question and I know there's probably not a firm answer, but yesterday during your workshop, the mayor, just back from his trip to Washington, outlined that he had achieved at least a bipartisan letter encouraging the powers that be to reinstate our BRIC grant. Do we have any idea if that's going to come through or not? Do we have a feeling for it? Are we optimistic? Either one of you.
I don't know anything more than what you heard from yesterday's workshop. Maybe I don't. Did Seth, do you know anything more?
No, I think that's it. It's in the hands of the powers, that be. And
so we're still there with our hand out, huh?
But that brings up a good point, though, because we initially heard that we were going to be cut out of the BRIC grant because we had already started the project. Initially, the grants are given out before the project start. But because, as Seth says, we don't know. It's in the power. It's in the hands of people that we have no control over. We just had to move forward with completing our water treatment plant, with no expectation of getting help from Washington, because there was just no way to know, and there still is no way to know if we're going to get any help. So we had to move forward, and hopefully people in Washington would understand that the reason we had to move forward, and that wouldn't exclude us from consideration that we've already broken ground, because we had to do what we had to do.
I mean, I think any amount of that money that we could claw back would be a great win for the city.
Just any amount of,
even if it's $25 million.
We are approved for that grant initially.
Yeah.
That's our understanding. And then I guess DOGE came in and things got scrutinized a little bit differently. And I guess the check was nearly in the mail from what we were told. And we never got it.
I mean, I do think that sending the mayor, public works director, and our lobbyist probably helped a little bit, you know? I mean, flying all the way out there and saying, hey, here's what we need. So, yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I you know, I agree with what Seth just said. It's like, even if we get part of it, I mean, we spent a couple $1,000 on airline tickets, and, you know, the stakes involved are so big, we had to give it a shot. So it was the right move sending them. And then hopefully, if we got it all back, that'd be amazing. But anything, as he said, anything we get back is better than nothing.
Yeah, right. If we get a significant back, I get some back on my water bill, don't I?
You would. You would.
Okay. It'd be a great.
just a little bit, please. Yeah. At any rate, yesterday dealt a lot about with the agreement with the Josephine County Visitors Association and what was going on downtown, and could result in a savings of up to $45,000, depending on who's running the visitor center. And this was a reconsideration. This is coming up on Wednesday night. Is this something of concern right now, or are we just going to revote on this?
I think it was, I think we hashed out pretty much everything that we wanted to hash out on yesterday. There is, one option that I was going to send an email to council about for them to consider. I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other, but there is an option, because I talked to, CPA yesterday about the difference between an audit and a review and so forth, and I got much more information on that than what was provided yesterday by staff, and maybe the visitors group would like to there's an option there that they may want to avail themselves of, but other than that, I think we worked out the I think we hammered out pretty much all the details that were concerned to people. So I think hopefully tomorrow night on that issue should be pretty easy.
Pretty straightforward.
I hope so.
I'm going to invite Seth to weigh in on this. I'm not sure he will, depending on how many hats he wears here. Because I know you had to recuse yourself because of your association with Main Street Grants Pass.
Well, and association with Visit Grants Pass and my conflict of interest there. So, yeah, no comment.
Coward. No. We certainly understand. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Stay tuned. We've got more coming.
Hellgate Jet Boating.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, still time for your phone call or one or two. Give us a call, 541-472-1270. In the meantime, though, we've got probably just a little less than 10 minutes left. Let's see. What are your constituents talking to you about these days, Seth? Are there things that we haven't covered so far this morning that you need to clarify?
No, I mean, I think, you know, again, most of the time still, it's a lot that has to do with Parker's Place and Elk Island and what the progress is there. I know there's been concerns, and Rob can probably attest to this too, just even downtown with the homeless right now and just, you know, what's been going on there. So, and it's definitely gotten a little worse, I think, you know, with the nicer weather, things
change. Have we seen more activity downtown with the homeless then?
Yeah, I mean, I have an office downtown, and obviously Rob's downtown for sure. So, you know, and it's going to be interesting when Parker's Place does open, we close A Street. I think there's definitely going to be a time that
transition
it's
situation.
Gonna be, it's going to be a little brutal for a little bit, I think.
Yeah, when I've spoken to and the police chief and other officials, everyone agrees that or acknowledges that it's likely, you know, when we begin to close the resting sites that displacement theory is real. I mean, only a certain percentage of those people are going to want to go to a place that has rules. So let's just say, and a lot of the officials involved estimate, that maybe 50% of the people who are in those camps might not want to go to a place that has rules. They're going to be wandering around town. And it could be 3 months to 6 months to 9 months until things settle. And hopefully, you know, we did budget for 6 extra police officers next year. And hopefully the extra manpower can help us deal with the dust up that is likely that everyone acknowledges is likely to occur, because, you know, it's not like the people that don't go to Parker's are not just going to get on a bus and leave town, or not just automatically going to clean up and get jobs and become, contributing members of society. So there's going to be a level of it. And from what I've been told is once the word gets out in surrounding areas and into the ether that Grants Pass, has a different situation, and that you're now encouraged to go to a place that has rules and they do have a facility, that it may not be as an attractive destination for some people to settle down in who don't have any plan for their where they're going to stay overnight. So it's going to be.
They'll migrate. Is the hope.
Well, you know, that's the word you used, and I would say that that's probably accurate. You know, it's or they might avail themselves, and hopefully they would avail themselves of the rehabilitation and of the case management and all the help that is actually going to be available. And it's available now, but it's going to really get improved once Parker's opens, because one of the things I remember that Bernie was saying is that one of the things that he was going to incorporate at Parker's, if somebody was down there and needed drug treatment and they needed to go, because there really is no drug treatment in Grants Pass, they have to go other places in state, that all their belongings would be kept safely for when they leave for 3 weeks or 6 weeks to go to treatment, and a bed would be held for them, and they'd be able to come back to a bed. So that kind of thinking on part of Mint and Bernie, I think, is really hopeful that we're going to be able to get more people help, and some of these people will be hopefully take the hand up and be rehabilitated, and everything, you know, things will work out for them in the future.
So. Well, let's hope. We have a call standing by. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Yes, I do. Good morning. I agree with the perception that was just discussed that it has gotten worse downtown, and the homeless people that are wandering around downtown making messes, you know, scattering trash and food on the sidewalks, taking their clothes off, yelling at people, scaring people, being just generally, not all of them, but enough that it's a concern. And so in Medford and Ashland, for years, they've had something called an exclusion zone, where they cite the people, and after three citations, it's like three strikes and you're out, and they are banned from going into the downtown area for 1 month, 3 months, or 6 months, depending on the severity and frequency of their criminal activity. I, as chair of the Historical Building and Sites Commission that oversees the historic district and its resources, have been pushing for years for a municipal court in this town, which is in the city charter, that we should have one, but we don't. But these other towns, also Roseburg, Central Point, Medford, Ashland, all have exclusion zones. The police chief here is in favor of that. I'm in favor of it. The Historic Commission is in favor of it. It's something that can be accomplished quickly. A municipal court would be great to have, and we need to develop that, but that could take a year, two, 3 years. An exclusion zone can be developed within 30 days. So I just want to see how these counselors feel about an exclusion zone to help downtown deal with the homeless problem. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ward. Ward Warren. He certainly told everybody who he was there. So let me just phrase the question this way. Once we get that 150 beds open in June, that allows our police department to be more active, proactive in that particular situation. Is an exclusion zone in your vision right now? Either one of you, jump in.
Well, I'm happy to take that. So,
looking at each other. Folks.
We got a memo from the city attorney that gave great deal of detail on exclusion zones and so forth. And I emailed back and asked a question. I think I sent it to the entire council. That particular day, there was an article in the police report in the newspaper that talked about a person that had been arrested 27 times in the last year. And I asked the city attorney, so how exactly is an exclusion zone going to prevent that person from being arrested the 28th time? They obviously don't care about law at all. And many of the biggest problems that Ward just described are people that obviously don't care about the law. And I don't think that they would care whether they got arrested in an or cited in an exclusion zone or outside of an exclusion zone. So I have very little hopes that an exclusion zone by itself is going to do very much. And as a result, yesterday in the workshop, as I brought up, I think it's we'll call it a three-legged stool that's going to be required, municipal court, exclusion zone potentially. And then we have to hear from the sheriff why our jail is only at a little bit more than half capacity. Why is there no place for people when police do bring them to the jail? So right now we've got police force that's spinning their wheels, arresting someone 27 times, and I probably by now it's probably 29 or 30 times. So an exclusion zone, no one has explained to me at all why an exclusion zone would really help at all. I mean, it would look nice on paper. It sounds good. But the other towns that have exclusion zones are also in a county that may have more capacity in their jail. And I don't know. And I need to, personally, I think myself and council need to hear the full picture. In 30 days, we could have an exclusion zone on the books. Will it do anything? No one's explained. The city attorney never answered my question why it would do anything. And I, as of yet, no one else has answered that question. So there's, to me, exclusion zone would make some people feel good by putting it on paper. Whether it would do anything by itself, I have a lot of doubt.
Seth, yay or nay, exclusion zone?
Well, yeah, like Rob said, it looks good on paper. I've wondered the same thing. I mean, how you can't just draw an imaginary line and somehow these, you know, downtown's going to be great again. I mean, I think it's going to be a tough uphill battle. Although, Ward, I will say, good news, June 15th, the municipal court is on the workshop agenda right now. So add it to your calendar. So yeah, I'm curious though to hear more about the municipal court, and I'm sure exclusionary zones will come up in that conversation. You know, and all this is kind of in that time frame. I think that makes sense, you know, with Parker's Place closing the camps and going from there. So,
all right, gentlemen, I'm basically out of time, so I'm going to steal some more time, and I'll give you each 2 minutes to wrap up how important today's message was and what people need to take away from today's show and look forward to the future. Go ahead, Seth.
Well, I think today you can take away that, you know, as a council, we are trying to be good stewards of taxpayer money. We're working every day to, you know, make sure we're financially, you know, making sense, you know, especially with the non-bargaining. And I think, you know, like Rob said, you know, $25,000 might seem like a lot, but it'll save money in the long term, hopefully avoid some potential legal battles. And yeah, so there's that. I think Parker's Place, again, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but I am hopeful that it will be open June 1, at least in some capacity, where we can start moving people in, you know, and that may mean that they have more work to do after that, but I'm hopeful.
All right. Thank you very much, Seth Benham. All right, Rob, final 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'll start out with talking a little bit about Parker's Place. One thing that is really noticeable is that once it was made clear that Elk Island and Bernie was going to get that contract, and once it was made clear that he actually had started work, the temperature in council chambers dropped dramatically. The dozens of people that would come and talk at public comment and just vent and quite frankly justifiably vent has dropped probably 90%. So I think that once we get this even further behind us, and that could be hopefully June 1st, we begin to see as we can close our resting sites, hopefully the city, meaning the city government, and hopefully the citizens also will be able to focus on really, frankly, more positive things. And the Midland, Washington would be a more positive thing, having our downtown be cleaned up, or having the whole city, our downtown parks and everyone else be a little bit more cleaned up as we get a better handle on the unhoused situation, I think is going to be nothing but positive. And I've already seen the shift in the tone at council meetings.
All right. Kudos, Rob, for not mentioning that Fifth Street is closed, but the sidewalks are still open and so are the stores.
The sidewalks are that's a nightmare. And the H Street businesses and the surrounding businesses, Fifth Street, it's a nightmare. We had a meeting last week of some of those businesses, and it's just terrible for many people's business. Really, really bad. We're hoping for, you know, a bounce back afterwards, and we're hoping, but there's a lot of issues there, and it's just so if you can support the businesses that are near that construction site on G Street, on Fifth Street, or on H Street in any way, shape, or form, they need it, and it would be really appreciated.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Once again, KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.